So I'll be talking about mineralogical controls on the mobility of arsenic and lead that are derived from lead arsenate pesticides. And a little bit of background on lead arsenate pesticides. They were the most common pesticide in the U.S. Before 1950. They were the precursor to DDT, which replaced it as the safer alternative. They were applied especially heavily in apple orchards and other types of orchards as well. And you can see there, they're just spraying them on the apple trees. This has resulted in large-scale contamination of soils where lead arsenate pesticide was formerly applied. A lot of the initial research that was done focused on soil concentrations and showed that even many years after application, both lead and arsenic were found still bound to soil particles, and there's very limited vertical mobility. More recent research has correlated high arsenic contamination in streams with both a high density of agriculture in the area where those contaminated streams are, and then more recently showing that adjacent to a disturbed old orchard land, there was contamination in that stream. However, there's been little research on the fate of lead from these contaminated soils, and there's been no research on the transport mechanisms. This has become increasingly important as historical agricultural land is being developed into housing developments. So this leads us to the question of what is the mechanism for arsenic and lead transported into streams adjacent to these contaminated soils? Is it solute transport? Due to the circumneutral pH and generally oxidized conditions, it's likely not solute transport. So what we think is going on is that there's solid phase transport in overland flow. So in overland flow events, arsenic and lead are being transported into the streams bound to sediment particles. In order to investigate this, we surveyed a number of streams in New England where we were looking for locations that where there were historic orchards, or where there was known contamination of the soil, adjacent to streams, and also where there was current development, so we could see how that was affecting the transport of both arsenic and lead. Of the streams we initially surveyed, we ended up focusing on McQuaid Brook, which is right outside of Manchester, New Hampshire. And the soil profile of the orchard that's adjacent to McQuaid Brook is very indicative of a lot of the soil profiles that you see in lead arsenate contaminated orchards. Lead is about four times higher in concentration than arsenic, and the contamination is down to only about 20 centimeters in depth. The other interesting part about this site is over here. This whole area used to be an orchard, and now most of it's a housing development. But this point of land was being developed during the course of our study. So we had the chance to see how the disturbance of that land would affect the mobility of these contaminated soil particles. In order to do this, we had to find and be there at times when there was overland flow occurring. So that took a lot of watching radar screens and figuring out if there was going to be a big enough storm. And it always seems to rain on Saturday night, so I spent a lot of my master's degree looking at a radar screen. Anyway, was able to collect a number of events of overland flow. We analyzed the water and also the solid, the soil and the sediment by doing aquaregia leaches and analyzing them on the ICP-OES. We also did on the mass spectrometer, we did lead isotopes so we could try and fingerprint that and know the source of the sediment in the overland flow. So in these overland flow events, what happens is this green area, which is the area where the construction is occurring, there's sheet overland flow coming off there, and then it funnels into a small ephemeral tributary, and so it's sort of in between overland flow and an ephemeral tributary, and it flows down into McQuaid Brook. If we look at the total concentrations of sediment in this overland flow, we can see that it dropped. That at first, it's there's quite a lot of sediment, well above background in this overland flow, and then it drops off quite rapidly. However, what's more interesting to look at is the lead and arsenic concentration in these sediments. So the blue here is the lead concentration, and the arsenic concentration is in the red squares. And with distance downstream, so this is distance away from the soil in the overland flow path, these points A, B, C, D, and E correlate with these points going down this hill slope. And both arsenic and lead drop off very rapidly. Dissolved concentrations of arsenic and lead were all less than 1 microgram per liter. And lead isotopes also confirm that the lead arsenate pesticides were the source of the lead, at least, that's coming off in this overland flow. So we see that overland flow transports particle-bound arsenic and lead. This was not, all of that data was from July 24th, but this also occurred at several other events. So these were several other overland flow events that we were able to collect data from, and we see that similar arsenic and lead concentrations here were coming off directly off of the contaminated and disturbed site. So the initial conclusions, if we look at a conceptual model, we have intense rain on disturbed land mobilizes arsenic and lead that are bound to soil particles. Then in overland flow in this ephemeral tributary, they flow down the hillside and into the stream bed. However, the most interesting observation from this initial research is that arsenic and lead are differentially mobile. If both arsenic and lead were moving away from the contaminated site at the same point, they would fall somewhere within this mixing region between the concentration of lead and arsenic in the contaminated soil and the background soil and background stream sediment. However, the suspended sediment that we collected during overland flow falls way over here, implying a rapid loss of lead. And so the question is, why? If particles in, bearing arsenic and lead are settling out of the flow, why are they differentially mobile? Is it because there's a difference in size, and lead is bound to particles that are larger, whereas arsenic is bound to particles that are smaller, and that's resulting in their differential mobility? Or is it a difference in density? Are they associated with different minerals that have different densities and will thus result in different transport distances? In order to investigate size, we did two things. We used a Coulter counter to see the overall size distribution, and then we also used a settling column so that we could fractionate particles and actually see what size arsenic and lead were primarily in. This is the results from both of those studies. The solid lines are the Coulter counter data, so it's the overall particle size distribution of both the soil and then the suspended sediment. And then the dots are arsenic and lead concentrations. And so one of the interesting things that we see here is that the primary particle size that is transporting arsenic and lead is the silt size. It's not in the less than 1 micron range. So that in these intense events, we have silt-sized particles that are the dominant transporter of both arsenic and lead. The other indication of this is that arsenic and lead are both associated with very similar sized particles. The graphs plot basically in the same size distribution, so it's likely not size that is controlling how mobile they are. So in order to investigate our other thought that they're associated with different minerals, we went to the Stanford synchrotron and did X-ray absorption spectroscopy. This was great because we are able to use an in-situ probe of oxidation state and speciation. It would be difficult to use traditional speciation techniques with these small particle sizes and low concentrations. For arsenic, we were able to do XAFS theoretical shell fitting and show that basically 100% of the arsenic is in the oxidized form. And also the arsenic iron bond distance showed that it is adsorbed to iron oxides. That's not a huge surprise. What's more interesting is the results of the lead. Now, since lead was in low concentrations and also lead has a complex coordination environment, we couldn't do the theoretical shell fitting, but we could do linear combination fitting of known standards. And so the three standards that fit our data the best were lead bound to iron oxides, lead adsorbed to manganese oxides, and pyromorphite. The pyromorphite formation was also confirmed by scanning electron microscope images that was coupled with energy dispersive spectroscopy, so we could actually see the composition of pyromorphite and actually see the size of these grains. So to recap the speciation of these suspended sediments, we have arsenic bound to, or adsorbed to iron oxides, and then we have lead in two different forms. We have lead adsorbed to both iron and manganese oxides, and we have lead found in pyromorphite, which is a crystalline mineral. Now, what's the significance of this pyromorphite? Pyromorphite's very insoluble, so it will minimize the chemical transport of lead. And pyromorphite's also very dense, so which will also minimize the physical transport distance of lead relative to arsenic. So pyromorphite has a density of around 7, whereas iron oxides has a range that's at least around half that. So this will have great implications in the amount of physical transport that that lead will occur. So if we look at this in if we look at the concentration of pyromorphite and the concentration of lead bound in pyromorphite and of lead bound in other phases with distance away from the source. So as you go from the soil down into the stream in these overland flow sediments, what we can see is that the pyromorphite decreases very rapidly. This black block is the pyromorphite, and it decreases extremely rapidly. And down here, the error bars are greater than the size of pyromorphite. So this rapid decrease of lead bound in pyromorphite is likely the result of the differential mobility of arsenic and lead, the reason that you have lead falling off much more sharply than arsenic. But we wanted to take this one step further and see if we can quantify this effect. And so we created a model of contaminated particles settling in a turbulent flow. The data that we have to model are normalized arsenic, total arsenic and lead concentrations, and then normalized fraction of lead bound in pyromorphite, which is derived from the speciation, and all of those with respect to distance. In order to develop a conceptual model, we go back to our little diagram here, and if we look at one unit box of the overland flow, we can see that there's an invective flux coming in and out of the box, but there's also a flux due to settling. So if we just define these terms, the invective flux is the velocity of the overland flow times the concentration. Settling flux is the settling velocity times the concentration. And then Q is the unit discharge. We can come up with our governing equation for this model. Now, when we do this, we can then plot our model back on our mixing chart. And what's great about this is that the model shows the reason that we have lead falling off much more rapidly than arsenic. It shows the reason for this deviation from the mixing region. So that's a pretty neat result. Confirmations of the model is that a fitting parameter in the model was the size of the particle, and that was for arsenic and lead adsorbed to oxides, that was 3 to 11 microns, which is interesting because it implies that we either have aggregates or surface coatings of these iron oxides because they're not silt-sized particles. And then we have that confirmation with the analytical data that shows the particle size also in the small silt size range. And then our images of pyromorphite grains in the scanning electron microscope are also in the small silt size range. So we see that in disturbed environments, silt-sized particles transport are the primary transport vectors of arsenic and lead. In conclusion, we have silt-sized particles transporting arsenic and lead in overland flow. We found that that arsenic and lead are differentially mobile, and the reason for that is their differences in speciation, that mineralogy is controlling this physical transport, the amount of physical transport. And this mechanism can be quantified through modeling. The implications that are that land disturbance produces massive erosion, which is nothing new, and that these are relatively frequent events that can mobilize this amount of contamination. And it's also a significant fraction of the sediment yield into McQuaid Brook and into local streams. We also see that, again, silt-sized particles are important transport vectors of soil contaminants. This is in contrast to in non-disturbed environments where primary transport vectors are usually nano or colloidal particles. And then pyromorphite is not completely immobile. This is has large implications for in situ remediation of lead, which is commonly done by trying to precipitate things like pyromorphite. And then also we see that even in these disturbed environments, you can have arsenic and lead transported to riparian zones and wetlands where trace metals are less stable and can be more toxic. So I've gone a little over 12 minutes, but a lot of funding sources and people that I'd like to thank, and I will take any questions that you have if there's time. Okay.
What happened to the housing development?
What happened to them? They're still there. They're
still there?
They're still there, yeah. Yeah, and that's just one of many in southern New England that are built on old apple orchards.
So the lead arsenate is like absolutely no residual impact.
I'm sorry?
No that residual lead arsenate.
It's all there's no residual lead arsenate that we were able to find. Yeah, it's all just either arsenic adsorbed iron oxides or lead in pyromorphite or on iron and manganese oxides. And we did some experiments as well where we took some of our soil and put a synthesized lead arsenate on it, and it very rapidly, within a couple of days, absorbed to soil particles. Yes?
What was the soil series for this site?
It's a Paxson fine sandy loam.
Yeah.